Devin and Morgana have been celebrating midlife love by getting married 100 times in 100 countries. They believe grown-up love gets better and more fun, especially for women. Everyone's smarter, wiser. Men are more relationship ready. And if they're not, it's obvious. Forget anything you were told about being too old or too late for love and adventure. Instead, get fresh new tips on dating, relating, and travel to exotic destinations. And best of all, call in for personal guidance, creating crazy, sexy midlife love in your life.
Hello, hello. Welcome to Crazy Sexy Midlife Love. My name is Morgana. This is my husband, Devin. We have been getting married 100 times in 100 countries, 25 down, 75 to go, and then I think we'll keep going. And one of those weddings was in Manzanillo, Mexico, at the Expert Insight Publishing Awards, the EPI Awards for best-selling authors. And Devin and I are both best-selling authors, so we were enticed to speak in Mexico several years back with the promise that they would throw us a wedding. Well, I think it was more a phrase like, we'll marry you. So I thought we would sneak off into a little corner. And the woman who hosts the event, Vicki Winterton, who owns the publishing company, I figured she would just, you know, read our script and marry us. And then we would get back to the event and the speakers and all that.
And by the way, we've had that before and it turned out great. I think we got married like that in Toronto and a couple other places where, matter of fact, where we've had like the receptionist behind the counter of the hotel come meet us out in the parking lot. And you know what I mean?
Yeah, do something Serbia, really, Mostar.
Really easy kind
Montenegro.
Of. Right, absolutely. Like they were all
that's
great.
Fine.
They were all great. So we were expecting sort of something similar and that would have been great.
And I threw a tunic with my yoga pants, but the tunic had white in it because it was a wedding. And I thought, okay, good to go. Easy to travel. And then we got there and there was this, I think, anthropologist who is asking us questions and giving us this outline of this incredibly ornate traditional ritual where somebody's going to sing and somebody's going to talk about chocolate and somebody's going to talk about like pepper and
well, so if I remember correctly,
okay.
Her name was Elizabeth Torres and she
I'm
is
so
an
glad
anthropologist
you remember.
And she was basically a professor outside of where we were staying near Colima, Manzanillo. And she put together a...
Which is a gorgeous coastal town in Mexico and where the movie 10 was shot, you know, where Bo Derek arises from the ocean like Aphrodite herself was shot in Manzanillo. Go on.
Right. And so it was... So it's a beautiful location. We were at this great resort. So this anthropologist basically said, because we weren't expecting anything, she said, okay, well, we need you to be on opposite sides of the staircase. There's all kinds of symbolism. There's actually 7 marriage trials. And she was an expert in Mayan and I believe Aztec culture. And so there was these 7 segments where there was like for each thing, there was chocolate and peppers and different herbs and things.
Salt and everything represents something.
Yeah, no, this was like a heavy duty ritual and ceremony. I don't know.
Incense and flowers and dancers.
That. Right. And so for each segment of the 7 steps of this kind of earthly wedding, there was no joke, like 40 costume dancers who were all, and they were doing very specific dance moves. Everything was heavily choreographed. It wasn't sort of like, just everybody go like this. It was not, there was no hokey pokey going on. This was like stuff that people had to rehearse with. And quite literally, part of the team of dancers that were there ranged from like 5 years old to like 75 years old. So it had this huge thing, loads of incense. They made sort of like they had the north, south, east, and west, the quarters created out of 4 different different kinds of very colorful flowers. And we had come down these spiral staircases to meet each other. But since we could not see each other initially, we had to face away with our backs turned towards each other as we were still searching for the other one.
It was like really, to represent all of our years single, looking for the other person and not seeing the other person.
Right. And so there was singing, there was dancing.
To represent going to the past and going to the future.
It was elaborate. All I can say is it was elaborate. It was really quite remarkable. There was loads of different, like, audience people had to come up and recite things, do things. And I had to sing a song, which I think I chose "I'm in the Mood for Love." And I forgot the lyrics. And fortunately, Elizabeth remembered them. And it was a really special day. And it wasn't done. It wasn't done because we had sort of like the state lasso champion of Kolima, who was like 11, come out, or at least he was for his age group. He was the lasso champion. He came out. There was also pinatas for the kids.
Starting with us,
and we did horribly.
Yeah.
Then they had a charro. A charro is a, pardon my really rolling my R's, it's a double R word in Spanish. A charro is basically like a cowboy, but it's like a Latin lover cowboy. So he is like dressed to the nines with the cowboy hat and lots of silver all over him and working it out. And he is on a dancing horse. In other words, a highly, highly trained horse that did all kinds of remarkable tricks. It was crazy.
And then they fed us and they gave us that kind of what is the liquor, the kind that tequila, like this incredibly expensive tequila that was like one of the tastiest things that I've ever had, but it's like fire going down your throat. And we're in this glorious resort on the water and tropical and beautiful and all these wonderful, kind people, and everybody just kind of comes together like a family, and they're our family for this event. Even if we didn't know them before the event, years later, they remember being there. And we're bringing this up because we just had this year's Epi Awards. We are once again best-selling authors. And this time it's because they interviewed us about our wedding and then put it into a book called The Magic of Manzanillo, which became an international number one bestseller.
Right.
Yeah. And reading that chapter like just brought it all back. And so we won some more literary awards for being in this book, because the book won a bunch of awards, and we had the grand ceremony today, and exciting stuff. So that's what's been going on. And then
we should point out Vicki Winterton was the remarkable, incredibly generous publisher who puts together the event. We've been to multiple events, and that is the lovely Vicki and her husband.
For those of you watching the video, I'm holding up the program that has Vicki Winterton and her husband Terry, who live down in Manzanillo. And you visit enough times, and you kind of want to move down there.
It's without question, it's a beautiful part of the world. I can't wait to get back to
next year. Year's awards. We do it every year.
Yeah, it was. It's a great event. It's a great event.
But after the virtual ceremonies wrapped up and we went to the beach and came home, we saw a plane with a banner. Devin saw it. I was too oblivious. What did the banner say?
It said, "I love you. Will you marry me, Ashley?" And so that was the romance of the day. And I told that airplane driver that her name was Morgana. And he came up with Ashley. Let me say, sometimes you don't get what you pay for. And so this is just one of those moments where I am,
because I shake my fist at the heavens.
I'm outraged.
That Devin's never proposed to me with an airplane.
Well, I did, but he got the pilot. The pilot got it wrong.
And I fell in love with you for your above-par lying skills.
Oh, I'm so glad that you... You believe me.
Okay, so we have an amazing guest. Like, all airplanes aside, we have an amazing guest today. I saw her speak a few weeks ago and I was enthralled and inspired. She is a visionary and a poet. She is a soul sage doctor, a keynote speaker, an author, a coach, and you're gonna love her. I heard her speak and I just wanted her for the show so badly and I didn't know how to fit her in. And so I asked her if she was married and she said 19 years. And that was like, okay, that takes care of that. You're in. So we are going to meet Precious Pauling and her husband, Rondell. And I can't wait for you to fall in love with them like I did. Welcome, Precious. And before we dive in, I have to ask you, how did you get your name Precious?
I'm so glad you asked that question. People often never ask me that question. But what happened was, I am the second oldest of seven, and my mom went into labor, and when she went into labor, I was losing oxygen. So they had to do an emergency C-section. And when they did that emergency C-section, I came out, and they named me their Precious child. So that's how I got the name Precious.
That is beautiful. And it's such a perfect mirror to your message to everybody, which is, I choose me. I thought you might have chosen that name for yourself, given your message, I choose me. Mm-hmm. So since this show is primarily about, well, it is about love, and that includes self-love, but we are usually talking about loving somebody else and being loved by somebody else. How does I choose me fit into the picture for you? You've been married, I think, how many years?
19 years.
19 years. Yes. Whoa.
We just celebrated 19 years March 3rd. So, yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And you have five kids.
Five. Yes, we do. We have three girls and twin boys. So we have a 19-year-old. She'll be 20. Everybody's going up. So we're going to have a 20-year-old. We're going to have a 16-year-old. We're going to have a 14-year-old. And we have twin boys that will be turning 12. So, yes, we have a nice little tribe over here.
So how does choosing yourself fit into all that?
Oh, my goodness. One of the most amazing things is that when we, on our 19-year anniversary, my husband did a re-proposal to me as a surprise with all the kids being there. And so we're going to renew our vows next year with them being included, everybody. But what was so amazing was in his vows, one of the lines that brought tears to me was that he said that you taught me to spoil your husband and your kids and still make time for you. A lot of people who follow me, who know my story, I am not afraid to let people know what it costs for me to be worth my yes. And I suffered from incest molestation. I suffered from not being believed. I suffered from a lot of trauma. And what I learned in that trauma was that God was processing me into promise. And so I didn't figure out what all that meant until I became a mom. I had decided that I wasn't going to have any kids. Think of the irony of five, right? Most people that see me like, you have five kids? You know, you were somebody that said I was going to be free because I was overwhelmed and I was the second oldest, so I was real responsible. And I was like, when I get my freedom, I'm just going to do me and I want to make sure that I could have everything I want and I choose me. And I realized that God was processing me because of what I went through, it made me a different mom. It made me want to be a stay-at-home mom. And while I was staying at home, not because I was thinking about what I would develop into, I was staying at home because of the fear of what had been planted in me, the fear that maybe my kids wouldn't be safe or maybe they wouldn't be able to tell me their story. And so that fear birthed a mother. So I realized that in the valley, my value was formed. And so I learned to teach them that their voice mattered, and I learned to pour into them, and I showed them love and God showed me love. And so I say that the process of me growing and loving myself, when everybody was thinking, oh, well, you know, she should go get a job or she should do other things that me and my husband sacrificed at a time when people weren't seeing that being done, especially in our community. We are a 20-year-old and a 20-year-old, 21-year-old who got married. So you're talking about kids who had to grow up together. But we were able to realize that because of all of that process of me being able to deal with those pain issues and show up as a mom, I was able to develop into who I am today. And so it cost me that experience in order for me to show up and actually be able to become the self-love guru, because I realized the word says, treat your neighbors as you treat yourself. And until I love on me, until I celebrate me, until I let go of those things that hindered the beauty or the light, you know, they just showed me that it was going to make me the answer to somebody's problem. And so that's, I think that was the gift in that lesson that I was able to turn into a blessing.
Can I ask you a question?
Absolutely.
First off, that's a beautiful story. The first thing that comes to my mind is that a lot of people who go through the kind of trauma that you're describing, sometimes they don't come out the other side as perfect and whole as you do. Is there sort of a do you have, what's your secret? What's your secret to success for doing that?
The secret to success was that exact idea that I realized that I had to change the way I saw it. I had to mentor my mindset. So we do spring cleaning on our homes, our cars. We actually take care of everything outside of our soul. Our soul is the most important thing. And to me, all the soul is how you think about yourself. So what I had to do was realize that all of those negative things that I thought that were, I would say, thrown in my garden through my experiences of life, it was my job to take the weed out, but not to cut it, to deal with it. And so instead of me getting apologies, I started to seek God. I started to seek guidance. I started to seek the value in those moments. And then I stopped judging people for who they were, and I judged the idea that God wrote them in like that. So when I forgave the people who God wrote in the story for who he wanted me to become, I became a better person. And it taught them to realize that we don't have to hold on to a lot of stuff, that our gift is turning that experience into the solution. That's why God sent me. So when I realized that it was bigger than me, when I was able to share more of my story, I mean, it was years. I was married to my husband for 5 years before he knew I was molested by my own father. I didn't share that. So could you imagine how confused he was because of stuff that I buried, which we all do because we claim the shame of other people and not the process or the promise that we got or developed through it. So by me being courageous enough to be able to tell myself my value and not care what the outside was thinking before they could understand the story, it gave me the courage to let my mess aid so I could have a message. I would say the gift I gave myself was allowing myself the time without the restrictions to go through what I was feeling in order to be who I am today. So I, it's no magic pill, but it was a conscious decision to have faith in the you want to be. And it started by how I saw it, because everything starts from a seed of thought that becomes your reality. So when I, and people used to say all the time, you live in a fairy tale land, but now it looks like a reality to them. So I became, they didn't hear me then, but because I have all the tools that I use to share through my sold my doctorate, my courses, my programs, which is so funny that the precious that I say, a gram, a professional in gram is solidness, right? And so when I think about the grams, I think about the gems that we drop, which are intellectual property. If I can give you a piece of myself, which was just information for you to apply and it changed the trajectory of your life, then that is why those are gems. And that's why precious is so befitting even now that I know myself more than I did 20 years ago or maybe 40 years ago when I was born, that God is allowing us to process into our namesake. And we get to name ourselves through what we know is true. And what is true is that I went through that, but I didn't die there. I resurrected. And what is true is that evidence is who I am because of that. And if we would find out what we went through, I say the why is when heaven yells. And that is what your wisdom hat. So now I carry a wisdom hat because when heaven yelled, I listened and I showed up in order to turn that death into a resurrection. And that's what you see today.
I love the way you speak. I love your way with words. You're so inspirational. I know you hear that, I'm sure, every day of your life. And you said so much good stuff, but there was one thing that really stuck, like such an easy hook that I've never heard before, is when your mess ages, that's your message. Oh my God. And it implies that there is the allowance of time for that to happen. You don't have to like get right. It instantly. Mm. Can you talk about that?
Yes, I have actually one of the topics that I deal with that says that your purpose is not microwavable. It's like cooking. And so we want what we want now. And we say God is always an on-time God and that he pre-qualifies us. And he doesn't pre-qualify you for the future. He pre-qualifies you for the now. And I say now is new opportunity worthy. And as long as you have breath, you have the now. And so the way we qualify ourselves is by basically realizing that as long as I'm stuck in yesterday, which is the pain of my past, and I don't show up in today, which is my present, I never get into the future. And so I realize that many of us are survivors, but many of us aren't soulvivors, because your soul is what you think about yourself after the experience. And so the insanity is that the flesh is showing the truth of the war and the battle won, but the mind is stuck in the defeat of not the victory. And so when I say we are survivors, we know we got through that thing, but we're not soulvivors because we haven't changed how we spoke about ourselves, which is why we haven't showed up in the fullness or the light of it all. So I often say that it's about us realizing that it's our responsibility to turn our heartbeat into a soul beat in order to leave a soul print. Because the fingerprint tells us what you got wrong in this world, but the soul print tells us what you got right. And I often say what God got right is you. And so if I could find out what was that for and what it was teaching me and how can I serve somebody with it for me to get a return on my investment, then that is me showing up purposefully every day. Because process into promise is about purposefully stepping forward every single day until you reach whatever destination. And they are going to change upon arrival. But if you don't have faith in your yesterday and what you acquired and what you conquered, then what will you have to lead you into your tomorrow? So the mindset of dealing with our soul, the mindset of what we accomplished through it all, is what leads us into our greatest destiny, where we get to live in a reality that looks like magic. So people look at me like, you're so magical. And it's because we are all magical, because we are the supernatural force. Abracadabra is a moment. Every moment we choose to show up for ourselves, we create another moment, which is the wand in your life. So you're waiting for somebody to show you magic when God said, I placed the magic inside you. You've experienced that. You know your worth. You know your value. The question is, what will you do with what you paid for what you already acquired?
What I love about what you're saying, and by the way, I completely agree with you. I love how you talk about purpose and consciousness and being in this moment. And I think when I think of similar things, I tend to think of sort of like we're always at a Y crossroads. And it's either I can be in fear or I can be in faith. And the problem is the fear frequently appears very real. right? And the universe has a way of saying, are you sure you want to go down this faith road? Because I'm going to give you a whole lot of reasons to not see the faith. I'm going to give you a whole lot of reasons to feel the fear. And I think that's what stops a lot of people. I think that stops a lot of people because what ends up happening is, okay, I know it's right. I know the right thing to do, or I know the next action I should be taking in my life. And then I'm going to feel the fear. And I don't like it because I just want to feel okay. And sometimes I'd rather just be like flatlined rather than having to do this other thing where I don't know what the result's going to be. Right. And so I'm assuming when you talk to people, you probably talk a lot about this idea of fear and getting beyond what you think you are supposed to be in this world. How do you work with people, or how do you talk to people about that idea?
You know what I find? A lot of times people don't have enough people to share their truths with. Because the reason why we don't celebrate our experiences is because everybody is always defending themselves. And nobody is hearing how it landed or what you throw. And so everybody is fighting to be heard and nobody is fighting to listen. And I think that's another big part of service. So what I do is I listen to them. Because in listening to them, I give them another perspective. You see, the problem is that they have no other perspective than the one that's traveling in their mind. And so God always says, if two touch and agree, it is so. I challenge myself through my experience to always be someone who can touch and agree with where they are in order for them to get through. And we live in lives where we don't have that person to touch and agree on our dreams because it seems irrational, to touch and agree on our experiences because they're comparing it to theirs, to touch and agree on what makes us authentic because it doesn't look like what makes them authentic. And I want them to understand that what being one of a kind means is value in the fact that from where you're standing, it matters. And I want them to know that the reason why it matters is because they're here. And we all know matter is nothing but stuff that takes up space. And you matter because God has you still breathing. And so the idea is to find out, why did he want it to matter to you? Because in every scenario, God is so powerful that everybody's getting their own private lesson to turn into a blessing. And while we're so confused on minding God's business, which is other people's perspective in it, we forget about ours. And I often tell them it is our ability to be dumb. People get offended when I say dumb because most people don't know what it means. To be dumb means to be without voice or speechless. And we go from dumb kids to dumb adults because we suffer in silence. And when I say no more sis, I don't say queen, girl, woman. I mean suffering in silence. We all suffer in silence through the traumas that we think other people can't deal with. And then they misunderstand how we react because we have that seed that somebody else planted that we haven't gardened in our own mindset or in our realities. And so what I teach them is to not see it as what they did wrong, but see it as what you missed. Because what they said only stuck to you because it was already there. Because you confirm or deny whatever somebody offers you. And while we can blame the world for our misunderstanding of the light that we possess, it all starts with the relationship that we occur with ourselves. And if I can love on me, and if I can know me, and I can embrace my worthiness, then it changes how I hear what you say. And instead of me feeling offended, I might start feeling empathy. Because I can hear in your words the mirror of yourself. I can hear in your words what you expect or what you thought you gave me because you tried to, but you may have missed the mark. And if we can stop being offended by each other and really try to understand, we all become that very special piece that creates the whole puzzle, which is one unique place, one unique thing that cannot be compared, nor can it fit in any other position. So it allows us to be our own selves and really listen to other people's perspective and be open-minded so that we can actually try to heal in order to get to the levels that we deserve to be. And that's what every moment is teaching us, healing.
You said something very interesting about listening that reminded me of what you said in the beginning about how your abuse wasn't believed.
Right.
I think that's one of the biggest pains human beings have. Sometimes just being heard and having your experience validated can heal the wound itself.
And can I tell you what I just got when you said that too, that touched my heart? Because of that non-belief, guess what it told me? That I didn't need a co-signer because it was still real whether they believed me or not. So it let me see that it doesn't, their belief system doesn't change the reality of the situation. And so my belief system was according to my experience. And we fight to defend people's experiences when it is real from where they are standing and what they know to be so. And instead of challenging their reality in accordance to what you want, because it messes up the picture of what you created, it is about accepting how it hit them and how it affects them. And so that's why belief is so important, because if it doesn't start with you, nobody can co-sign it.
Your reality is your reality. That's all that matters, and that's not negotiable.
Yes.
So let's go back to I choose me. And you also chose your husband.
Oh, yes.
How does that work together?
I would say,
you're right on time. Here you come.
Right on cue.
I would say, how I chose, you know how I chose my husband? It's so crazy that it was ordained. He really ordained. Because honestly, when we got together, I had a boyfriend. I wasn't even looking. And he happened to be around, and let's just say, you know, he grew on me. I said he came to, and I would say he chose me unconsciously. I always say he came to kill, steal, and destroy. And he got, and I put a flag in him. And he married me, what, twice already with 5 kids and, a 19. So I think, well, actually, why don't you say, tell them what made you choose me? Because I think a man finds a woman and then we agree if we can co-sign the idea. So what made you want to marry me?
You started off on an easy question.
Her frugalness. Her frugalness is what really.
I can't quite hear you.
Her frugalness is what actually attracted me. Of course, her beauty. She was a nice looking young lady. But when we went to the store, and she asked for a discount, and then she got a discount, and then she checked her receipt and refused to leave. That's something that she thought was too much. I was like, wow, so she's different. Different. So she kind of got me, you know. She did a couple little things that kind of went above beyond the normal stuff that women were normally doing for me. So I was just like, well, she just gave me a different look about it from her actions.
Nice. So he liked me because I was different, and I have this shirt that I made that says he married his favorite girlfriend. Because we love a lot, and he may have loved us all, but to be favored is to be set aside, is to be set apart. And so I would say that when they pick a wife, it is because of all the girlfriends, you stood out as the favorite. Now, if you stay the favorite, is something different. But the reason they chose to marry you was because you were different than anything they experienced, and I believe they trusted themselves with him. Because one of the key things was he felt that I was looking out for him. And not looking out for what I needed, but I give to receive. And so because I was serving him, he saw the light in me. And light and service is light. So I guess that's how, that's a good way.
So this brings up a couple questions for me. So we're talking about a marriage, which for me means that I'm choosing someone to be sacred to me, right? Beyond everybody else. Because we've got, 7 billion people on the planet. And I'm choosing this one rather than searching around, right? So there's the search. So there's the sacred part to it. And then there is the favorite part to it? How do you maintain, how did you know that you were each other's sacred person? And how did you know, like, how do you maintain after 19 years that you are still the favorite? Like, is there something that you guys do to do that, to maintain that?
Well, for me, it's, I've been in situations in my marriage, you know, when we got married young, that we're, well, I've been in relationships where once I get tired of something, I mean, that's it. Like, it's no more talking. I can just cut anyone off. To this day, I can just cut anyone off, and it doesn't affect me. It's no, like, there's no love loss. I don't get miserable. I don't miss people, like, none of that. But when it came to her, even when she pushed me to where I felt I've never been pushed before, I just couldn't walk away from the relationship. I don't know what it, like, it has to be something bigger than me. And that's how I felt. It was something bigger than this, because I don't normally, you know, I don't, it's a lot of stuff that I just couldn't deal with, that I'm dealing with now, and that I didn't even know that I was able to do until I got into a marriage, a relationship with this young lady right here. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would say, is just the wanting to change. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know. I absolutely know. There's something else. To me, there's something else going on, right? Mm. Like, we're having a conversation, but there's, for me anyway, there's this bigger thing that's going on that I don't quite always understand. I tend to call that thing God, but you call it the cosmic ooze, call it, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter. I just think there's this other thing that's going on. And the more I'm aware of it, the more I can pick and choose things in and out of my life in a conscious way. And when I'm conscious of that thing, I lead a better life. You know, I don't always love the results.
Right.
I don't have to love the results, but I tend to be, like, at ease with me. Like, it's okay, you know, like, I'm not happy with the result, but okay, we're moving forward. Is that something that's true for you as well?
Yes, I would say one of the things that I have been practicing, especially in this last year in a marriage, is emotional control. Give you a quick story. I had hired myself. I started this program where you hire yourself. And so you pick a part of your life that you want to create momentum in, and you must hire yourself 40 hours a week in that specific area, creating qualifications, and you have to follow through for 30 days to form the habit. So I was doing this monthly hire myself, and I was doing my other business things, and I decided to hire myself in my marriage to spend extra time to make sure that while I was being an amazing mom and an amazing speaker and an amazing coach and doctor and all these other things, that I was being an amazing wife as well. So on this particular day, I say, okay, it's middle in the afternoon and he's not going to be expecting this. I'm hiring myself. I'm going to make a bubble bath, because we all know at the end of the day, you know, there's one thing that can always fix a man sometimes. So I said, I'm going to give him a bubble bath, give him that one-on-one time, because with all the kids, you could imagine how hard it is to get that one-on-one time. So I set the bubbles, and I got the music going, and he's laying on the bed, and I'm walking from the bathroom. The double doors are open, and you can hear the love songs playing from the wedding, and he's just laying there. Now I'm practicing my emotional control, because I have that consciousness in me now. So I was taking two steps in the old precious, and I walked 2 feet, and I was about to say, what are you doing? You want this time? I'm setting the time, and da-da-da-da. And that was my first instinct, but the whisper say, you can create your reality by how you do. So on the third step, I changed my energy. And I walked up to him as he was laying on the bed, ignoring all of this. And I decided to just take off his sock. And when he looked up and he saw me, he immediately got back in focus, because it wasn't what I thought it was. Once again, the seeds in my mind. He just was distracted. Nothing more, nothing less. But I could lie to myself and change the outcome. But because I was consciously thinking, I can dictate my outcome by how I show up. So because I did that and he opened his eyes and he looked up, we had an amazing afternoon, which I know wouldn't have been if I had been the person that I was okay being and with this chip on my shoulder. But if our responsibility is to always have a good day, then it starts with how I show up, not how he shows up, but the me that shows up, because it's very hard for them to fight against love. I say love grows everything, and he just couldn't do nothing but, and I saw in that moment, because I've had moments when it went the other way, so I already knew how that would end up, but I chose a different tactic and got exactly what I deserved, which was what we saw before we started. And so once you create that vision, what you do, those moments are actually going to follow through with it being exactly how you want it to be, just by your showing up and being okay with it not working out the way you thought. But if your goal is for the best, then you got to always put your best forward.
You just gave the greatest argument for why I believe midlife love is better. We're just smarter.
Yes, we are smarter.
We've already failed a lot.
Probably. Oh, my God. Everything. That's so true.
Yeah, no, I've failed at everything. And I think what you're talking about is, if you want something different, you're going to have to do something different.
Come on now.
And if I'm getting used to, like, if something doesn't go my way and I yell and scream at it, I'm going to get that result every single time.
Yeah.
Every single time. So it's just logic. If I want some other thing to take place, right? Because me yelling and screaming has a certain kind of results.
Right.
And they're usually not what I want. It usually doesn't make me happy. I don't sleep better because of it. Mm-hmm. If I do this other thing, and you just talked about it so beautifully that you can do it in a split second.
Split second.
And I'm sure it was hard. I'm sure it wasn't the
easy
choice. I'm sure you have this one side of you going, I'm going to kill him. And the other side is like, but wait.
But just love him.
And it's a whisper. No, just love him more. Double down on the love. And when you double down on the love, everything seemed to change.
Always. Always. There's only one way. And that's what I think we're learning in that midlife love, to communicate better. We are actually working on a book that will not come out until later, but it's called, until our 20-year anniversary, we're going to launch it. But it's called Loving Healthy, Living Wealthy. But wealthy is spelled W-E-L-L-T-H-Y. Because the more we learn each other, wasn't that we started here, but I love to say we process into promise. We actually showed up for the yes, because every day that you're married, I often say when people ask about the yes, it's like when he proposed to me, when he got up, we weren't married. We had to plan a wedding. We had to go through those steps. We had to prepare for the yes. And that is what happens when you say I do. Every day you wake up showing up for that yes, what it requires of you to follow through with the yes of what marriage looks like. So it doesn't mean it's easy. It only means it's worth it. And because we put into the work, and because we invested in our loves, we get to get a return of amazing children, to get amazing communication that we grew into because we were able to unpack our trust and insecurities on each other. So we no longer felt that we were alone, but we realized that God actually blessed us with a journey buddy that was going to make us deal with the things that we thought were hidden so that we could be the person that God called us to be. So I know that I'm everything I am because of him, even though I had no idea that my gift and a lot of the love for myself was trapped in how he was going to see me, serve me, protect me, and show up. So he rewrote the story of my past and gave me a future of magic. So yeah.
Were you going to say something? Okay. So you mentioned the book that you're writing.
Mm-hmm.
You've actually already written a number of books, which are, I believe, available at your website.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll put that in the show notes. If you got to choose one book that would make the biggest impact on our audience, what book would you recommend?
It would definitely be 365 Days of Loving Yourself to Life, Becoming the Gift You Were Always Meant to Be. because my mission started by until you love you. It's like this cup. And if you have a cup, and no matter what your responsibility is, if I take this cup and I set it here and I set it into a pen, and say this, a pen was sitting around the cup, let's say a flat pen, and I begin to say or pour from the water of the pitcher, I poured a little bit in myself, which represents the cup, just enough for it to stand, and then I stopped pouring into me and I started to pour into the pen, which represents my roles and titles, meaning whatever job I am, me being a mom, me being a wife, me being a friend, daughter, all those things, and I begin to pour into the pen. And every time I show this experiment, the cup always falls over. And then I stop them and I pour everything out. And I want them to see what God meant when he said, love yourself first. It's not selfish, it's selfless. Because when I put that cup back down and I begin to say, I am a healer, I am a teacher, I am special, I am motivated, I am the X factor. And I filled up that cup and only poured in that cup. As the water began to pour, guess what? This cup began to overfill, and it began to fall into all of my roles and titles, my wife, my being a mother, being a sister, being a friend. And as no matter how much I poured into the she that God created me to be, no matter all the overflow, the cup never fell over. And guess what? The pen overflowed. And so did everything else that was around it. Because the idea is, when I take care of me, I'm really taking care of everything that is attached to me. I am the ocean and they are the streams. So as much water is in me, as much can flow through them. So if I do my work, then the other work is easy. That's the concept.
And how is that working for you, Rondell?
Wow, that's working very well. That's the one thing I've learned is change, man. You have to constantly change. Even, I mean, not just in a marriage, any relationship that you have, man, it's constant change.
Mm-hmm. Renewing your mind daily.
Well, I think we're supposed to evolve.
Yes.
Right? Even if it's like, you know, I think we're supposed to just kind of, we have to be present. And I think we have to kind of roll with it and then look inward about what it is that I can change, because I can't make you change. I can't make the world change to serve me. That's not going to happen. Right. That's me yelling and screaming and getting the results that, you know, are terrible. But I can change and I can look into my heart and try to turn it, because usually it's much more about a slight shift in perception leading to great change rather than me throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
That's right. That's right.
You know, I just have to do these little things and be like what you said. Oh, you know what? I'm not going to get annoyed with my husband. I'm going to take off his sock and gently guide him to be present with me.
That's right.
Yeah, no, I love that. I think that's wonderful.
Oh, let me tell you a pivotal thing we learned that was, what, about 5 years ago? The reason why he felt, I was like, you know, I would give my opinions all the time. And he was like, I was like, why you act like you jealous? Because I get to say what I want to say. You can say what you want to say. And he was like, that is not true. I was like, what do you mean is not true? He said, example, if I say what I want to say, it changes my nighttime experience. So I choose to suffer in silence because I prefer to have a nighttime experience. So in that moment, I apologized and I said, moving forward, you have the permission to say whatever you're feeling. And no matter how I receive it, it doesn't change your nighttime experience. So here's something that for 15 years, he was suffering in silence because he wanted to make sure that at the end of the day, he can get loving. So he would not deal with real issues that were annoying him for his bottom line. And so it was like how much we miss for what we want. And it's unfair that we aren't given the permission to be vulnerable and share our truth because we don't want people to punish us for how it landed on us. And I think, like we said at the beginning, why it's hard to have conversations, because we know we can't trust people with our truth because it changes how they move instead of changes how they hear us.
How did you work with yourself to receive things that he said that may have hurt?
I'm still working on that every day, because I realize in my own teaching people that, you know, educator, you're being, that means that you're learning as you're teaching. And so what I learned that I still got to do this spring cleaning because there are certain things that are always coming up. And so, like I said, it is a journey, buddy, that God is trying to basically get you ready for positioning. And so all of these things that I'm taking you through is to mold you into that thing I need you to be. So when I realized that he was making me address the seeds that had been planted, that I was hearing him different. So it wasn't what he was saying, it was what I was hearing due to somebody else's planting, that I wasn't treating him according to the plant that he showed up as, but I was treating him according to the bad seeds that other people left in me. And so I had to start realizing that by everything he's doing, that what I'm thinking he's meaning is so wrong. And by us having I started this one word conversations with two of my friends we do on Sunday. We really talk about words. And what I realized is that words have emotional connections to them according to who introduced you to the word. And so I often say, my dad for me is different than somebody else. I don't take your truth of it from you. I allow you to live in your experience of being walked down an aisle. But in the same breath, you don't get to take my experience from me. You allow me to say certain people I leave at a distance. And so it's allowing each other to realize that if I can allow you to stand in your perspective because it was your experience, and you allow me to stand in mine and thus not take it personal, but count it as process, that we're better for it. So it is still something that I am practicing daily, and it starts with my emotional control. I realize that when I react, I'm out of control emotionally, meaning I haven't addressed that which is inside of me. So I realize it has nothing to do with him. It's all me. And so it allows me to be like, all right, this is a you thing. Let him learn his lesson. It ain't my job to teach him his lesson. I give it to God. But I got to learn mine because it's keep on testing me. So God, I say the tests are today's evidence of surviving trials. So I got to find out, what do I need to survive today so that I can change my tomorrow by how I think? And I'm ruining time by misunderstanding and misappropriating situations and words that have no validity in this relationship. So that's a daily practice that I'm telling you. Once I master, honey, I'm going to sell that book.
Well, no, there is, you know, what you're describing is stuff that I've personally studied for a long time, or at least the way I'm understanding it. It deals with something called Kabbalah, which is basically kind of like a mystical form of Judaism. And what you're describing, or at least the way I'm understanding it, is that we really learn to take our reaction and turn it into proaction. In other words, we turn it into consciousness. Because I think when I look at the world, what I see so much of the conflict is that we're reacting to things. Mm-hmm. And we try to control this thing, and we can't.
Yeah.
And so the only thing I again, going back to what we were just talking about a couple of minutes ago, is that I have the choice to either react to the thing. And more often than not, when I react to something, even if it's a positive reaction, sometimes it's like, yeah, no, maybe you need to take a step back and breathe on this for a couple of minutes before taking an action. In other words, moving my reactive brain into some sort of consciousness. Some sort of like where I'm willing, you know, I've thought about the right action here. You know, sometimes, you know, like there have been periods when I've given my daughter, and one of the things that I always think about is I love my daughter very much. And when she was tiny, we'd go through the market, and she would yell and scream when we were going down the cookie aisle because she'd see some cartoon clown and she wants the cartoon clown. And so, you know, I'm thinking, I don't want her hopped up on sugar. So she's going to yell and scream. And there were occasions where literally I would take the box of cookies and say, I love you. But it really wasn't, I love you. It was really, shut up. I just don't want you to know that. So I have this. So really what I was doing is I was basing my reaction. You know what I mean? I was giving into this moment based upon the way her yelling and screaming was making me feel, rather than me sort of doing what I knew to be the right thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, she can have a cookie, just not now.
Yeah. You know? Yes. Yes.
Okay. We are just about out of time. I would love to have this conversation forever.
I know, right? That was
crazy. And we're supposed to, actually.
And we should. Yeah. On and off, right? Or that's yeah. right.
But how would you wrap this up? What is the best advice that you could give our listeners before they follow up with you at preciouspauling.com?
The best advice I can give is that it's an inside job, and that the insight and the vision that you have is true, and it has been co-signed, and that all of those things that you've been through, all of those experiences that have you locked up, I say it is your opportunity to be able to share. And so it's about us realizing that we don't compete, but we complete one another. And the difference between compete and complete is the L. And the L stands for love. And when we begin to love ourselves, like God told us to, we begin to love each other effortlessly on the journey of promise into whatever levels of destiny that are called to us. So I just want you to know that it is a baton, that it is up to us to pass the baton, to realize that we can never turn on anybody else's light, but we can provide enough light for them to find their switch. So it is our responsibility to stay lit in this world so somebody can find their way out of the darkness. I hope that somewhere on this hour that a light will shine in your darkness for you to know that yea, though I walk through the shadow of the valley of death, I shall fear no evil, for thou art with me, and the with me are us. God sent us to be with you, to share with you our testimonies, the places where we fell short, but where we got up again. And that is how we grow, by showing up because we can and because somebody is waiting on us. So if you do your job, then no work will be done. So I Choose Me is about you realizing that if I work on me and I do my personal work, there's nothing left to do.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Oh.
Thank you for having us. It's been such a privilege and a pleasure to be a part of what this amazing midlife love conversation.
Yes. And to our audience, if you love conversations like this, please join us again. We're here every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Pacific time. Go to crazysexymidlifelove.com and join our love family. Download Devin's free ebook, Women Are Smarter Than Men.
Yes, because they are.
And we will see you again next week. Mwah.
Thank you for listening to Crazy Sexy Midlife Love. Please sign up to join our free love family at crazysexymidlifelove.com. To get alerts to live shows, call in and ask questions, or just listen in. And ladies, don't forget to download Devin's free ebook, Women Are Smarter Than Men and Other Secrets Marriage-Minded Women Need to Know. Also available at crazysexymidlifelove.com.